It's like we're changing gears a lot this morning, doesn't it? Let's focus now on God's Word together. We've been looking at Ecclesiastes over the last few weeks, and I just want to begin with a quick little recap of to some of the keys to understanding how this book works. We see a refrain that keeps appearing through the book. In fact, there's a number of refrains. I've printed two of them for you at the top of your outline. If you'd like to open your outlines and keep them open, you can follow along. They are meaningless, meaningless, and then what do people gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? Ecclesiastes is an experiment. It's a research project, if you like. It's an investigation into the purpose of what life is all about. The author is probably King Solomon, the wealthiest and wisest king of his day. And he goes about various pathways to try and explore if meaning can be found there. Each time we discover a dead end, and we'll see that again today. But what we're going to be looking at today is really the answer to this question that keeps appearing throughout the book. What do people gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? What is there to show for life? What is worthwhile? What's purposeful? What's meaningful? What is of value? What have we got to hang on to? That's his question. And he's going to explore it in the domain of work. And I think it's a helpful one for us to look at. Work is something that dominates our adult lives. And so to be thinking about the value and purpose of our life is not a theoretical exercise, it's actually very, very practical. And when we think about what the purpose of work is all about, why do we labour and toil, without looking particularly at Ecclesiastes, it's clear that the most basic reason really is that we work so as to live. We work so as to be able to gain an income so that we can provide for the things that we need. The things that our children need, perhaps that our parents need. We work so as to live, to stay alive, to have food, to have clothing, to have shelter. And we do that for ourselves and we do it for our families. And throughout most of history, that would be the most obvious and only answer for most people. Why would you ask such a question? It's obvious why we work, because we need to stay alive. That's why we work. Of course, throughout history, there's also been people who haven't needed to work. And people who would have despised work. It would only be those who were poor who would need to work. The wealthy, of course, who inherited their wealth, they didn't have to do anything as dirty as work. And I guess not only throughout history, but if we were to be a little broader than just the city of Canberra, if we were to look around about our world, maybe statistically that is still the fundamentally main reason why people work. That is, so as to be able to provide for themselves and their family. But if we limit our range in this experiment, and I think, to be honest, if we think about most of us, to live to work is not the only reason, and in some cases, it's not even the primary reason. To work to live, I should have put it. Maybe the opposite has become true, that we live to work. And I think that there are three areas that are worth thinking about, and they do intersect with Ecclesiastes, that have become very, very prominent in our thinking about the purpose and value of work. And they are the three areas of satisfaction, significance, and security. Think about satisfaction for a minute. We work so as to gain enjoyment. And sometimes we move from one job to another job because we're not having any enjoyment in the workplace and we're looking to find one that will give it. We work so as to find purpose in our lives. It's purposeless just to be drifting around, going nowhere, and work is a good use of our time. Maybe we work so as to find value and to make a contribution that we find satisfying. I think personal fulfilment and satisfaction is a significant reason for working and for choosing particular jobs that we have. So too, significance. You see that in people's work environment, they gain a persona. They actually take on an identity. They gain respect from people. They're able to influence people. They have a certain status with people. I mean, you see it very clearly in some areas of the workforce. Probably the most stratified and obvious area of the workforce would be the military. People are ranked, and so their influence, their power, their status, their authority is actually tied to the rank that they have. Certain people need to salute other people and not vice versa. You recognise that there is a respect that goes with your job. And I think thinking outside of the more stratified areas, it's really become a very significant aspect of our identity, because we often ask the question in small talk and getting to know each other, so what do you do? And by that we mean, what job do you have? Because perhaps it fills our lives so significantly, but it's often also tied up with who we are. And so there were some people who would describe themselves as the name of their particular workplace. I am a public servant, or I am a teacher, or I am a physio, or I am an engineer. It's not really who you are, is it? It's not your whole identity, but it's so tied up with your identity that it's easy to speak in those terms, this is who I am. But there's also this area of security. And probably this is one that's pushed quite strongly upon us. It's reinforced by the system of our society, that we work so as to accumulate, so as to provide security for ourselves. And a recent term, I think, has entered into our the way we speak that kind of describes this, and that is we work so as to future-proof ourselves. The idea of guaranteeing a certain future, that we are not at risk from different things happening, particularly things happening with the economy, but maybe also things happening with the needs of society. I know that some people who invest and who are involved in kind of buying and selling of things need to diversify, because they are so much at risk by factors around about them that if they are to future-proof, they can't hang all that they do on one thing. They need to diversify their interests. Safety, comfort, freedom, pleasure, power, health, travel, opportunities, these are all derivative of work, aren't they? I mean, if we don't work and we don't have any other supply of income, then we can't eat out. We can't travel there. We can't stop working at a particular time. We need these things so as to provide satisfaction and significance and security. And this is very much a part of how we, I think, particularly in Australia and Canberra, view the nature of work. But I want to dip into the Bible here in Ecclesiastes, and I've just taken a sample out of the book. It comes up in a few other places, to look at some of the reasons that are given here as to why we labour and toil. And Ecclesiastes offers some insightful contributions, and I'll pick it up first of all in chapter 4 and verse 4. The author writes, "And I saw that all toil and all achievement spring from one person's envy of another. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind." Here is a reason for work. 30 or 40 years ago, there was a little phrase that said, "keeping up with the Joneses." That's what it means. Sorry, Joneses, it's not just you guys, but, you know, we're happy to... I could never keep up with you, Richard. You're far too fast. But keeping up with those around about us. It's this idea that the competition drives us to work, that rivalry kind of pushes us to work more, that envy, wanting what other people have, the greed, the desire to have for ourselves, actually pushes us to work to accumulate. And it's true, isn't it? If it wasn't true, we would not have an advertising industry. Because the advertising industry works on the basis of breeding and fueling discontent. You don't know that you need something until it gets advertised, and then you realise how much you need it. Really, junk mail, whether it's in the letterbox or in the inbox, is a kind of pornography of the modern day. It's fueling our discontent, our dissatisfaction, our desire to have what other people have, and not just what other people have, because who wants to be dragging along behind? We want to get ahead of what other people have. And so we want to tap into the things that are going to make us leaders of the pack and not followers, to stay ahead of those around about us. But it's a dead end. It's a dead end, this track. "This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind." We're never satisfied, are we? If we were satisfied, I mean, we'd still be using that car phone that Matt had out the front this morning, if we could find a car to plug it into.
But the fact that we get into these massive great Nokias and then they get shrunk to their tiny little Nokias and then Samsungs and Sonys and Ericssons and a whole bunch of other things and then the smartphones and then the iPhones and then there's got to be, you've got to have the 3 and then the 4 and then the 4S and then the 5 and then the 5S and the 5C and then the 6 and you don't want the 6 Plus because it kind of bends in your pocket. But there's this dissatisfaction that really is never satisfied. And it's a reason for work. It's why we work. There's another reason here that Ecclesiastes picks up on in chapter 2, and it's quite simply, we do it for our kids. We work for our kids or for our grandkids, perhaps. And you hear it said, don't you? I want my kids to have the education that I never had. I don't want my kids to have to work as hard as I had to work to gain things. I want my kids to be able to have their own home and phone. I want my kids to be able to do this and so on. We kind of do it for those who come after us. And it's not always just family. It can be in the area of the workplace as well. It might be in industry. We want to achieve this or we want to develop that so as to benefit those who come after us. We want to invest this in business so as to create a platform for something to be built on that in the days to come. We want to be able to put money into this farm so that our children and our grandchildren are able to benefit from the produce and the development of that particular place. Or in academia, maybe. We want to build the knowledge base. We want to spread out and deepen our understanding in particular areas so that people can base their work upon ours, they can learn from the mistakes, they can develop it further, and we can all benefit in society from these things in days to come. And it sounds reasonable, doesn't it? It sounds good to be looking to the future, even if it's not limited by ourselves, but it's pushing it on to our children and those who would come after us. But Ecclesiastes again has a warning. Let's just look again at what this warning is. Pick it up at chapter 2, verse 17. So I hated life because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of its meaning was chasing after the wind. I hated all the things that I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me, and who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish. Yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil into which I've poured my effort and skill under the sun, and this too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labour under the sun. For a person may labour with wisdom and knowledge and skill, and then they must leave all that they own to another who has not toiled for it. And this too is meaningless and a great misfortune. It's a sad picture there, isn't it? That the person is saying, look, I can invest in all of these things, but the reality is I've got no control over what those who come after me will do with it. Whether it's our children or whether it's our successor, whether it's the person who buys the property or takes over the business or the developer who knocks down everything that we poured our heart and soul into, or the whole firm changes its direction and disbands my project and moves on to other things. And he's saying here that it's just chasing after the wind. It's just meaningless. This is not where meaning is to be found. It's not in leaving it to those who come after it. And I think that there are some very prominent people in our world who've recognised the reality of that and acted on it. One of them is Queen Elizabeth II. I mean, she's now been queen for 62 years. Because who knows whether the one who comes after her will be wise or foolish. She's not been willing to hand it on to Charles. So too Rupert Murdoch. How old is he now? He must be approaching 170. But he hasn't handed on his business to Lachlan, and we've all seen the absolute debacle with Gina Rinehart and her children. I mean, not trusting those who come after us. What will they do with all that I've toiled for under the sun? Meaning is not to be found in passing on the inheritance. Now, there's another reason that's given for work here, and that is we work so as to make our lives miserable. Verse 17, so I hated life because the work is so grievous to me. Verse 18, I hated all the things that I'd toiled for because I've got to leave them to somebody and who knows about that person. He talks here about despair in verse 20 over his toilsome labour under the sun and so forth, and his toil and anxious striving in verse 22. And verse 23, all their days their work is grief and pain. Even at night their minds do not rest. And this too is meaningless. I mean, do we really work so as to make our lives miserable? Is that the answer? Is, as much as we don't want to admit that, is that the reality of our work? Is it the one thing in our life that seems to create problems for us? Whether it's problems in the workplace or problems when we come home from the workplace, is it the thing that gives us the most frustration? Is that where we gain our stress? Is it a place of boredom? Is that where our fear is generated, our anxiety comes from? These are fair questions to ask, aren't they? Look, if this is what we get for our work, what do we gain for our labour under the sun? We gain heartache and we gain stress and we gain anxiety and we fall into depression and we struggle with relationships and we can't sleep at night and it's because of work. Then why work? Well, they're good questions to ask, aren't they? They're fair questions. So what do we gain from our labours at which we toil under the sun? Well, I want us to look closely at verse 24 in verse chapter 2. Verse 24, a person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This, too, I see, is from the hand of God, for without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? Now, it's not all misery guts, Ecclesiastes. It's honest, it's real, it's exposed, it's raw, but there are these little glimpses from time to time that there is more than meets the eye. And verse 24 is another example of this, where God is put back into the picture. And you see that it's possible to gain satisfaction in our toil. It's possible to enjoy our eating and drinking, and to enjoy our work, it's saying, because it's from the hand of God. And from the hand of God, we can actually gain something that is worthwhile, something that creates pleasure, something that we can be satisfied by. See, work can be fun. Work can give us enjoyment. Work does open up options in life. It gives us opportunities. We can enjoy the stuff that we are able to have because we have jobs. The home that we live in, perhaps. The car that takes us places. The bike that we're able to travel the mountainside with. The guitar that we can sit and strum. The fine food and wine that we might enjoy in a restaurant. These are good gifts. And these are to be received with thanksgiving. The holiday that we're able to take, the opportunity to gather with friends in a far and distant place. These are great gifts from God that come about through our toil. It's not all bad. And we need to be careful here about going either or when it comes to our thinking about the meaning of work. Yes, there is an honest, raw, deep analysis of the limitations of work that Ecclesiastes gives us. And even when we see that this is from the hand of God, he goes on immediately in verse 25 and 26 to say, to the person who pleases him, God gives wisdom and knowledge and happiness, but the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. And this too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. We can't push this too deeply. Yes, God can give us satisfaction in our work and the things that work creates for us. And I think what it's pushing us to see is that if we see it in the light of being a gift from God, we can get this satisfaction, but it's limited. You don't want to look too deeply. You don't want to analyse every aspect of it. You don't want to seek to gain too much because it won't be able to deliver. Yes, these things are good to enjoy. Yes, this is pleasing to God, but don't push us too far, because if you actually seek to derive your satisfaction from your work, it will disappoint you. But if your satisfaction is found ultimately in God, then he will enable you, perhaps, to find little s satisfaction in your work. It's not ultimate. It's not the meaning of life. It's not your purpose. It's not your identity. And the same is true with significance and with security. These are limited. You cannot be fully significant. Doesn't matter what profession you have. It doesn't matter whether you're the President of the United States of America. that's not your significance, because one day you'll be a dead president of the United States of America and nobody will even remember your name. None of you, by the way, will be president of the United States of America. Don't get me wrong on this. Nor will it provide ultimate security. You may never have to lift a finger for your whole life. Money might be able to buy you everything you could possibly want for, but it won't buy you out of death. It won't secure your ultimate future. So, friends, let us see the value of work, that there is little value. Little. It's that kind of equation that you see in 1 Timothy 4, where he's talking about physical training versus godliness. Physical training is of oligos value, little, limited, small. It doesn't dismiss it. It's a good thing to be physically fit. It's a good thing to be healthy and well. It's a good thing to be riding the bike, to be running down the track, to be exercising in the gym. It's a good thing, but it's of little value, small value, not ultimate value. Don't live for that. In the same way, your work, it's of oligos value, little value, small value, it's limited. Don't push it to find the meaning of life in your work, because you know what happens when you do that? You turn it into God. And when you face an idol up against God, the idol always fails. But there is a work that has lots of value. Lots of value. Not little value, lots of value. And I want to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. And I want to point out a couple of words in this chapter that I think help us to see its connection to Ecclesiastes. We're nearly there, by the way. It's been a big morning. But I want you to see, before we finish, what is of lots of value. At the end of 1 Corinthians chapter 15, this big chapter on the resurrection, he says this: "Therefore, my dear brothers," verse 58, "and sisters, stand firm, let nothing move you, always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord," the work of the Lord, "because you know that your labour in the Lord is not in vain." It's not meaningless. It's not futile. It's not temporary. It's not limited. Your labour, your work, your energy, your effort in the Lord is meaningful. It's valuable. It's lasting. See, there is a work that is of great significance. There is a work that is lasting in its satisfaction, in its significance, in the security that it provides, and that work is gospel work. Now come back to chapter 15, verses 1 and 2. "Now, brothers and sisters, I want to remind you of the gospel I preached to you, which you received and on which you have taken your stand. By this gospel you are saved, if you hold firmly to the word I preached to you, otherwise you have believed in vain." See, there's a contrast here between believing in vain in verse 2 and in verse 58, giving yourself fully to the work of the Lord because you know that your labour in the Lord is not in vain. So what makes something not in vain, what makes something not futile, not meaningless, not valueless, is that it is based on the gospel and that it is the work of the Lord. All right? So gospel work here is gainful. It has lots of value. Now, I want to pause here because this is a very, very important point, that you hear what I'm saying and don't mishear what I'm saying or think you heard what I didn't say, all right? I'm not saying that Graham Sproul, because you work as a physio, your work is of little value. Me, on the other hand, because I work in gospel ministry, my work has lots of value. All right? That's not what I'm saying. And I'm not saying Pete Pryor, because you work as a teacher, that your work has little value, and hey, Ben's work, because he's working as a pastor, that has lots of value. Now, I could go right round the whole room if I had a clue what you all did, but I don't know, all right? And it would take too long, and we're already running late. That's not what we're saying here. It's not about a job. It's not about a profession. It's not about where your source of income comes from. It's about what you are working on. It's about what you're investing in. And I could be employed as a pastor and fill my time and effort with work that is in vain. You could be working as a teacher or a physio or working at home with your young children and fill your effort and your time with things that have eternal value, that are not in vain. And really, as God's children, we are called to live lives that are not in vain, to live lives in the light of the gospel, in the light of the resurrection. See, what it's saying here is that what we do as Christians that is built out of the gospel in the light of the resurrection for all eternity, that is meaningful. Whatever job we might have, however we fill our days, whatever profession might bring money into our accounts, it is gospel work that is valuable for eternity. And friends, that's something that we're all called to. See, if we're building a house, if we're coding software, if we're writing policy, if we're investing other people's money, if we're weeding the garden, if we're changing nappies, these are all important things. And under God, we can find some satisfaction and significance in these things. And there is in this world some aspect of security, but it's limited. It is little. And we are not to hang our hats on these things. We're not to invest everything in these things. But friends, when you share the gospel with a friend, when you teach your children from the scriptures, when you open up the Bible together in your groups and you encourage each other to persevere to the very end, no matter what trial you're going through, there you are doing something that has value for eternity. Treasure that, value that, invest in that. Encourage your brothers and sisters to keep on going. Teach your children to love and trust the Lord Jesus Christ. Pray for the persecuted Christians in other places who must be under threat of their lives at gunpoint, that they will not turn their backs on Jesus. Make a cuppa for people after church that they might sit around and spur each other on to be followers of Jesus, because friends, your labour in the Lord is not in vain. Thanks.